This is The Topic is Trek, episode 16 for Friday, March 9th, 2018. Live from Roropente.
Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already!
How much do we pay that announcer? Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton. Not enough or too much. I'm Clinton, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And beaming in to join me, as always, is Mr. Craig Stepp. Hello, Craig.
Yo, I'm good. I'm
all
really
right.
Good.
Excellent, excellent. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Captain on the bridge.
I don't remember you getting that promotion. When did that happen?
I got the whistle out of the Captain Crunch. It's a thing.
Well, we have to be on our best behavior because we have a special guest with us this evening, all the way from Megapodtastic, Mr. Crazy Joe Fiore.
Hey, I don't have a whistle from Captain Crunch, but I am holding a glow-in-the-dark Star Wars spoon that I got out of a box of Cheerios.
Star Wars?
Joe, the topic is not Star Wars.
Yes, remember now. What you do on your own podcast on your own time is your concern. But I'm glad to hear everyone is doing well. We're experiencing here on the East Coast a bit of snowy weather in the Northeast.
Snow. I vaguely remember that concept.
Yes, I thought I'd remind you, Chuck. Chuck is out in Arizona, so he's... although we have apparently another state that might be joining in on this whole time zone thing, because today Florida announced that they are going to, they want to stay on daylight saving time all year long. I don't know how that's all going to work.
So when everybody springs ahead, or they'll be on daylight saving time. So when they fall back in the summer, they're going to be the only state out there. Hey. 3 hours.
Florida's not compatible with anything.
Wow. No kidding.
So, hey, till the election rolls around. Wait till the election rolls around.
When do those polls open?
So, 4 o'clock. No, 5 o'clock.
Whether they open to, yeah.
So we'll leave the world of the world behind. And right now it's time to open up subspace chatter. We're going to tap in and see what's happening in and around the Star Trek universe. And we're going to start off by going into our time machine with Craig.
All right. So I can't really read anything because this is a more of a YouTube video that I found. But this is that time when Quark was on Regis and Kathy Lee. I don't know if either of you
dressed
any
up
of you,
as Quark, not just Armin Shimerman.
Right. Yeah, well, he was as both, actually. So he came on, he sat through the makeup to be able to come on, and he was as Quark, and it was kind of semi-awkward because I don't think Regis actually knew who he was. But
hopefully
it was really
he knew he was in makeup. That part we hope is true.
Yeah, well, of course. And but they made it to sound like he was like the hero on the show.
He was.
A little bit. It was like... Well, only a couple episodes, but it made him sound like he was the hero of the show or something. And it was just kind of awkward, but it was fun to watch nonetheless. Kind of 20 years younger, which.
So he was like 80?
Yeah, I was going to say he was like 80.
And Kathy Lee's got her X-Files outfit on.
Yeah. Pre-Hoda days. And I want to mention that you'll be able to see this by going to the show notes for episode 16 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Yeah.
And we have links to all the stories we're talking about this evening.
Hey, by the way, before we move on, the other cool thing about this video was, you know, he announced how much time it takes to take the makeup off, yet he had to step off stage. They do it real fast, and he came back out. And as he's as Armin Shimmerman is talking, you can see his fingernails are still, and his hands are still orange, you know. Anyway.
Oh, kind of like me after the Dragon Con parade. Just a big, ugly mess of half makeup.
It's a spray tan. It's worth it.
That's what you get when you move to Arizona.
Well, we're going to move from one set of weird ears in Star Trek to another.
But that was one of our better segues.
It was. I'm working on them.
Leonard Nimoy was promised Spock could have an operation if he hated the ears. Oh, this kind of harkens to... you know, the Orville, when they had to correct the, you know, make the girl baby the male baby. Anyway, Tuesday marks 3 years since the beloved actor's death. It turns out that when Star Trek got off the ground in 1966, Leonard Nimoy was not a fan of Spock's iconic ears. In fact, he was so unhappy at first that he was promised that after a number of episodes, the character could undergo an operation to remove the points. In a 1976 audio interview unearthed by Heat Vision on Tuesday, that's a great name,
Heat Vision,
which marks 3 years since the actor's passing, Nimoy explained that the first set of Spock ears were a mess and a sticking point between himself and the show creator Gene Roddenberry. Quote, "In the early stages of developing the makeup, before we shot the first pilot, we were with the wrong makeup people," Nimoy said to his old interview. "And they were making the ears for me experimentally at first, and they really looked grotesque. And we went through three or four of those sessions. As time got closer to the first day of shooting, I became more and more concerned about the look." Going back and forth with Roddenberry, who insisted on the ears, Nimoy was told an operation would be written into the show if the ears continued to be an issue. And finally, it was Fred Phillips, who was in charge of the makeup in the series, who knew what was wrong, Nimoy explained. The problem was the studio had already made the commitment to those people to make the ears and didn't want him to go elsewhere because it would cost more money, Phillips said. We must enforce the issue, and we got a good pair of ears to solve the problem. What did they go with, like the economy Walmart version ones?
I guess so. The ones you can just buy in the store for Halloween.
Get this. Hey, good thing. He would end up wearing 150 pairs of ears during the 3-year run of the series.
Wow. Huh. Hey, good thing he wasn't designed as a Ferengi.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if he had this operation to get rid of the ears, if another Vulcan came on the show like his father, would the father have the ears and he it's
oh very, that could be a source of contention.
Be weird.
Spock. I'd love to know what plot point they could come up with for why he would do that.
Mechanical rice picker?
he got his ears caught in just a bad. He got his ears caught in the 3D chess. I guess he's dark now. You don't have the lobes.
I'm a rebellious teen in my 80s.
All right. We're going to go.
Regis again. Are you talking about Regis again?
We are indeed. His ears have obviously all been fixed. We're going to jump from one Star Trek version to kind of another first story from Joe.
You know, I helped you out with the reference to the Orville.
Well, you know, this article starts off with the word Seth MacFarlane's ongoing tribute to Star Trek. I would call it Seth MacFarlane's blatant ripoff of Star Trek. But anyway, it continues to emulate Star Trek because they've added another writer who's worked in the Trek universe. And this time it's Joe Manosky, who has written 34 episodes over 4 different Star Trek shows, Next Generation, DS9, Voyager, and Discovery. He wrote Darmok, you know, one of the most popular episodes.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I saw a t-shirt on Facebook for sale today. It said, Picard's holding this huge gun and it says, Darmok, Enjalad, at Tanagra,
oh, yeah.
September 12th, 1990. It's like this tour shirt.
1991. Like a tour shirt. Yeah, that's right.
I kind of want one of those.
So this news got out because one of the costume designers, Ivy Thade, accidentally shared it on Instagram. It's been taken down since then, but a call sheet was posted to Instagram.
Yeah. You know, that's not, you don't want to have that happen. You know, that's just bad news. But it's interesting that, you know, Seth keeps his train rolling. Yeah, I think we can kind of go back and forth on homage or ripoff, you know, tribute.
I enjoy it. I enjoy it, but I just think it'll be a lot better if they find their own voice.
Yeah.
Agreed. Agreed. And clearly hiring somebody who writes for Star Trek is going to be the way to do that.
Yeah, that's the right path.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe I should have put this next story before that last story, because we're now back to Vulcan. In a way, as you know, on this show, we tend to do a lot of stories about Vulcan, Alberta, Canada, for some reason or another. I don't know why. We've never been there. I think the show should be live from there sometime, because clearly...
We could do that.
So Vulcan welcomes new tourism guru.
What are they up to now?
Well, the town of Vulcan's new tourism administrator is slowly getting his feet wet just a couple of weeks into the job. Grant Shaw, who's originally from Vulcan, has returned home, brought some whales with him, and is setting up.
That's not canon.
Not the voyage. Okay. he has a background in retail and customer service, but is getting a crash course in all things Star Trek. It's fun because it's kind of learning both sides of it. It's the tourism side and then really getting into the Star Trek side and what Vulcan has to offer. So, yeah, it really is fun. He says Star Trek is a great hook to get people to come to town, but he wants to show people Vulcan is more than just the Star Trek capital of Canada.
We have the Olive Shop over here. We have Little Wicker Baskets. We have a Starbucks
across the street.
So we've already had stories about they're fixing up their pool area to be more Star Trek themed, and we've had a story about how the city council or the town councilors of new Star Trek uniforms have been authorized for them.
The hand-me-downs as well.
So definitely, I think a trip to Vulcan, Alberta, Canada is in our future, gentlemen.
Hey, let's take the wives and let's go.
Woohoo!
We can
get that cruise.
We can open a shop full of Little Wicker Baskets.
Is the next stop after that Riverside, Iowa, where they declared themselves the future birthplace of Kirk?
Yes. It is. They're so close to each other. You know, Alberta, Canada, and Riverside, Iowa are like next door.
And then it's off to San Francisco to Starfleet headquarters.
There's whales there. See, it all comes together at this point.
If we talk long enough, we can tie anything together.
Get Larry here.
So let's now move from Canada to another member of the British Empire, where it's going to London.
The London. Should I do it with an accent?
No, you did British accent.
Oh, please do. Please do.
That would be such jolly good fun, said no one ever.
Instead of a British accent, why don't you do a Picard French accent?
Yeah. Wait, what?
Nice.
Hey, not even Jean-Luc can do that. All right, so the Royal Albert Hall box office, they're ready to take your Klingon calls.
Woohoo!
Have you been looking for a place to practice your Klingon language skills? You can use them to win two tickets to our upcoming Star Trek in Concert on Saturday, 2nd of June.
Wait, I'm looking at this article. Since when do Klingons wear glasses?
It's now. There's two of them right there.
Well, they normally prescribe Retinex 5.
Yeah, they're allergic to that.
You know, you said that like seconds before the words were forming in my mouth.
He's really quick with these throwback comments.
So just call Royal Albert Hall Klingon box office on 02079 795905973.
Yeah. No, that's the old number. Wait a minute.
0-800-999 Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so it says, call them after 10 a.m. on Friday. Order your tickets in Klingon, but leave your name and phone number in English, please, to be able to win a chance of free tickets and the to this film screening with a live orchestra. The first 10 people to book in Klingon will win 2 tickets each. And I think Patton Oswalt actually won. I'm just kidding. As you know, we saw him speak Klingon.
Yes.
Anyway.
Craig, so, I need some help with my Klingon. Can you help me with that?
Why? Well, funny you should say that.
Yeah.
He says, reading ahead in the article.
Yeah, the harsh, guttural Klingon language is called... What?
Got him.
Hull.
We're going to have a lot of fun with Icelandic next week.
No kidding. It was invented for Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and it has appeared in various Star Trek spinoffs in places all over the place, including Star Trek Discovery on Netflix. Anyway, they go on to show the alphabet and certain pronunciation, and there's pictures of people taking tickets.
Come on, sing the song.
A, B, K, D, E, G, H.
This is why we don't do the show in the same room, because Chuck has now put, you know, the stuff everywhere in his recording studio, you know, right now.
I'm going to start mourning this show as a Klingon.
I like these pronunciation rules. Vowels are simple to pronounce. A as in father, E like stare. There's no, it's a silent E.
I like shiver.
Okay.
Oh, like coal.
Well, yes, it's silent, but it's English silent, not American silent. Remember that.
Some consonants are pronounced like they are in English. B, J, L, M, N, P, T, and W. Ch is pronounced as in Puccini, which is double C's, but okay, we know what you're talking about. N, G is pronounced as in song, not finger or danger. Song. Song finger. Okay. D,
so you learn everything you want to know about Klingon from the like same bullet points. You'll be able to be fluent in Klingon in no time whatsoever.
And don't forget the apostrophe. It counts as a letter. It's a glottal stop, like
I wonder what kind of promotion they do when they do the Orville in concert.
Send in a leg. I don't know.
We're all missing a leg.
All right. We are going to move on back to Vulcan again.
Wait, you know, we're getting a lot of Vulcan action. And
we exist at this.
I've been double Spock tonight. Right. That's a new term. I just made it up. Double Spock.
Yeah. Very nice. Double Spock.
From IGN.com, not ING, they take all my money. And now, the most famous Vulcan of them all, Mr. Spock. Yeah! He's getting his own autobiography released thanks to Titan Books, the same folks who previously gave us the autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard and the autobiography of James T. Kirk. Like those books, the autobiography of Mr. Spock was written by David A. Goodman and will be an, quote, in-universe memoir chronicling the story of one of Starfleet's fan favorites. It will also include an 8-page full-color plate section and will be published in hardback by Titan October 16, 2018. Order today, kids. Check out the exclusive reveal of the cover art below. It's a Delta Shield and an outline diagram of the Enterprise without the iconic Star Trek font.
You know, this is cool because I just happened to notice, maybe it was on Amazon or something, the autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard, which is mentioned here, of course.
And interesting.
I said, I didn't know that was a thing.
Wait, and I did that wrong. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I didn't know it existed, but then that's funny that we have this story in here.
Here's the log line for the book. The autobiography of Mr. Spock tells the story of one of Starfleet's finest officers and one of the Federation's most celebrated citizens. Half human, half Vulcan, the book written in Spock's own words follows his difficult childhood on the planet Vulcan, his enrollment at Starfleet Academy, his adventures with Captain Kirk and the crew of the Starship Enterprise, his diplomatic triumph with the Klingons and the Romulans, and his death and amazing resurrection on the Genesis planet. We meet the friends he's made, the women he's loved, woo-hoo, and experience the triumph, all the pommeek soup you can drink, all the experience, triumphs, and tragedies of life and career that spanned a century. His struggle to find his place in the universe is one we can all relate to.
So wait, I don't see a mention of Michael Burnham.
I was just going to say that. Does it mention the two siblings he never likes to talk about?
No, it doesn't. It also doesn't explain, was it published as his autobiography in this universe?
Or the
other one? Yeah. Oh, because he ended up there.
In the mirror universe.
Yeah. They came together, actually.
His great goatee. That looked great.
It's very confusing.
Surely it's going to mention Michael. I mean, this is coming out in October, so they probably had some insight on that, I hope.
We'll have to wait and see.
Because that'd be cool to see a little backstory on the siblings and stuff.
I wonder if they'll mention his sampling of the spores.
There was one time when Spock smiled. Yeah, and told Kirk where to go.
Right next to the dog face boy.
And oddly enough, spores. Whatever.
Oddly enough, I was watching for the first time because I never saw him before. I was watching the Death Wish movies because I was thinking of seeing Bruce Willis's remake. Yeah. And I got last week. I was watching, and I got to Death Wish 2, and there was Leela Kalomi from This Side of Paradise.
Oh yes, Death
Wish 2. I did not know.
Did she have the lighting on her hair? And you hear that?
There was Marina Sirtis.
Well, she was Charles Bronson's real life wife, I believe.
Ah,
yes, I believe. I'm pretty sure that's. Kids, look it up, but I'm pretty sure that's true.
I wonder if they'll also mention how he botched the acetylcholine tests.
As that's on everybody's mind.
Immunity syndrome. Come on, we've got to mention Spock's failures as well as his successes.
People, come on, his brain. Come on, who's with me? Who's with me?
Brain and brain. What is brain?
Talk about an out of body experience. Let me tell you. But anyway, let's move on to something we saw last year and we're seeing again this year, but for realsies.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, no, this sounds great, but I wouldn't pay $79.99 for it. Okay, every year on April Fool's Day, ThinkGeek has a bunch of things that they put out there. They show us. They're designed to go viral, but they're a joke. Except they're actually to gauge interest. If this is actually something that people want.
Brilliant.
And last year, one of these products was the Star Trek White Noise Sleep Machine, which was supposed to lull you to sleep with ambient engine sounds from the various ships.
Oh, I wish I had looked ahead. I would have had that sound effect here.
Hey, I can't sleep on the Star Trek cruise because we left our starship at home.
Well, they're making it. It's real. The Star Trek The Next Generation Bluetooth speaker is coming out. It's shaped like the Enterprise D. It's a detailed replica with LEDs and sound effects, and it can connect to your phone via Bluetooth, and it can create the Enterprise D engine sounds. It plays them for an hour before auto shut off.
It's a Bluetooth speaker, does it play music or is it just for that engine noise?
No, you can use it as a speaker.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a picture of a guy holding a phone right there with the Star Trek Beyond album cover.
Which is
It's $79.99. So I think it's a little overpriced.
You can only stream Star Trek soundtracks to the
from Memory Alpha.
Yeah,
but it's nice. It lights up.
It's got nice lighting effects. I like that shot. I don't know how much of that was doctored, but it's a good shot.
It's definitely something I would buy on clearance.
This well, you wait, know what this looks like?
Wait another year.
This looks like those Diamond Select starships that they make, where you can hit the button and it'll say stuff, because it also says incoming transmission, 1 minute to auto destruct. The Diamond Select ones are cool, but those are kind of pricey too. They're also like around $70.
They just took the Christmas ornament and made it really big. That's all this is.
I'll just hang this in the tree.
Or hang the tree on this. It's kind of big.
If it was for me, I just put this on the top of the tree.
That one there ornament costs more than my tree.
Right.
All right. And for our last story this evening, sci-fi writer talks Star Trek in Beatrice. Gage County paid tribute to Beatrice native Gene Kuhn over the weekend, celebrating the works of the man who helped shape Star Trek into the phenomenon it became.
Phenomenon.
The Gage, I mean, classy here. The Gage County Classic Film Institute hosted a weekend full of screenings, discussions, and special guests, all dedicated to Kuhn's legacy and his work in television in the 1960s. Kuhn was born in Beatrice in 1923 and became a big name in classic Western TV shows like Bonanza, Maverick, Have Gun Travel, Wild Wild West.
I just watched Wagon that with Train. Will Smith. That was a great movie.
No, not that. And that wasn't a great movie either. But it's Star Trek that he's most famous for. Working as a writer and producer for Star Trek, Kuhn captured the imagination of sci-fi fans, including David Gerald, who watched the premiere episode on September 8th, 1966. Yay, me too! When he was still in college. Wasn't in college yet! Gerald would go on to become a writer for Star Trek and was on hand throughout the weekend to talk about the show and Gene Kuhn's impact on television. So I think this was really, really cool to have a whole weekend devoted to him.
Yeah.
He was very instrumental. I think he and DC really were two people that shaped what Star Trek, the characters were all about. So it's nice to see that he's remembered. Now, I have to imagine that some of the people that were there over the weekend were people that knew Gene as well, aside from David, of course, obviously. But so there's no video from this weekend that I could find, but you might want to check in. As I said, David gave a talk about Gene. There's a picture of him giving some presentation on it. Maybe you can find that and learn a bit more about Gene. And I think it's important to know about him. All right. And that covers our story. So we're going to close up our subspace chatter. Sure, we'll do it that way. And move. I have no idea which buttons to push. I don't know what's going on here.
The green one. No, the red one. Yeah.
Not that one.
That's it. That's the one. We're on our main mission now. It's time to head out where we take a Z-minus 10,000 meter deep dive into one subject and try to stay on course. And this time around, I asked Joe if there's something he would like to talk about, and he immediately said yes.
Muppets.
Yes, there is. Well, that's the phenomena we talked about earlier.
Phenomena.
Well, we'll get back to the topic is Trek. I was waiting for that. There we go. So I'm going to turn things over to Joe to explain what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, well, I will tangent for a second and say that my Muppet world and my my Star Trek world collided in November when I got to visit the set of Sesame Street and Will Wheaton was there.
Yeah.
So that was a moment that it was like, whoa, what the heck?
Muppet Wesley, that would be cool.
Yes. So here's what I've been thinking. This is for a while now. Every time anymore. I don't think this used to be as much the case, but anytime there's some new version of Star Trek, whether it's the Kelvin movies or even Discovery, there's always a group of fans. And you hear a lot about fan gatekeeping these days. I don't know if this is a form of that or not, but you always hear a group of fans who say, well, that's not Star Trek. It's not Star Trek, because what Star Trek does is Star Trek takes modern problems, modern things that are going on in the real world, and puts them in a sci-fi allegory. That's what Star Trek does. And if this Kelvin movie doesn't do that, it's not Star Trek. It's a good action movie, but it's not Star Trek. And that drives me crazy, because I think Star Trek is it's so broad, and you could tell so many different kinds of stories in Star Trek that it's never been all one thing. Now, yes, it has always done those real world parallels, but that is most certainly not all it has done. There's been a lot of comedic episodes like Trouble with Tribbles or Little Green Men, The Magnificent Ferengi, they're just funny. There's a lot of stories in Star Trek. There's Wrath of Khan is always put up there as the best Star Trek movie, and there's no like allegory there. It's just a simple revenge thriller. The First Contact is basically a zombie movie in space. You can tell so many different kinds of stories within the framework of Star Trek, but now anymore, it's like, if you don't do Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, you're not doing Star Trek.
Yeah, I think
according to some fans, at least.
Yeah, I think that part of that started really early when you had that period between the original series going off air and the movies and Next Generation, you know, that the modern era, if you will, of Star Trek, where Gene kind of became more and more adamant about what Star Trek was about. And I think things were starting to become oversimplified. That Star Trek, yes, as you said, Joe, there are stories that are allegories, but that's not even the majority of stories that Star Trek has ever told.
I think it's what they're well known for, but you're one right, that's not all that it is. It's a component of that, and Star Trek and Starfleet have that, you know, be true to thyself mentality and do what's right that I think runs deeper than that.
Yeah, I think that you have stories where you have conflict and there isn't always necessarily even a resolution to that conflict, that it's left as an open-ended question. So that might be a thought piece as well, but it doesn't necessarily always have something to do with a current event. We were talking about DC earlier. DC Fontana is well known for talking about the fact that Star Trek could talk about things going on in the 60s and wrap them in a science fiction wrapper so that they could get that past the censors to talk about the war and civil rights and those type of things. And it was known for doing that, but on a infrequent basis. I see it as a tenet of Star Trek, one of the things Star Trek is known for, but I certainly wouldn't want every single time I go to see a Star Trek movie or watch a Star Trek episode that it has to be completely laden with references or, you know, thought pieces about what's happening in the world today, because quite frankly, that can also make it dated in some cases, unless you're really careful.
Should we give school teachers phasers?
Well, actually I see Star Trek as more character driven as far as the stories go, and if they're doing that, I'm good with it. Like the Kelvin movies, for what they are, I enjoyed them as a action set piece type movies, but at the same time we were learning about the characters on some level that we hadn't seen before, like, you know, Kirk and Spock and everybody, they were much younger, you know, on Earth before they even made it to into space. So that kind of was interesting to me, and they kind of drove that forward, and especially with Spock and McCoy starting to get to know each other a little bit. And of course we saw these characters in the original series. Then we saw character development in TNG for all those characters, especially Data. And then and Worf. And then DS9, we see Worf even further. And again, one of my favorite character arcs is Nog, you know, where he was really a, you know, young, scrappy little young Ferengi, and he turns out to be a captain, a war hero, lost his leg, and, you know, you name it. Anyway, so I see it as a big character piece, and the story of the human element when and everything. But I do enjoy the visual effects and the technology that they display and some of the forethought. So I don't know that sometimes I get a little fatigued hearing everybody's hard line on certain things. That's not Star Trek. Well, you know, yeah, it is.
Right. Well, my line on that always is, well, it is, because technically, no matter what else you say, technically it is being produced by the people who own the franchise.
Yeah, they own it.
It is Star Trek. I don't, yeah. You know, it could be two clowns, you know, juggling a ball someplace in, I don't know, in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
That's not my Kirk.
It may not be, but.
It has to be a red ball, a yellow ball, and a blue ball.
Ah, then well, it's cold up
there. There are four anyway, balls.
But also as far, but seriously, folks, I'm here all week. But as far as even the movies go, I mean, the classic Trek movies, right? You have Star Trek IV, which has a clear social message to it.
Save the whales.
But
spoiler alert,
really,
sorry.
I mean, you have war is bad. You know, the enemy isn't always the enemy type of things going on in some cases not. Some cases, no, the enemy is the enemy. I guess Star Trek, not Nemesis, Insurrection would be considered that type of, do we have the right to do this thing to mm-hmm. They aren't indigenous, but to, you know, to move these people from their land and so forth and so on. But
and perfect example, like you said, yeah, Insurrection's one of those movies, and that's one of the ones people always say they hate. Whenever yeah. people say, oh, what are the worst Star Trek movies, they always, oh, Insurrection's the worst. No, Star Trek V, no, Nemesis. But that one's always thrown out there, and it's like, okay, so one of the movies that is the most Star Trek is one of the ones you like the least. According to that framework.
Right. And I think we're agreeing that it definitely is not the case. And I think that as maybe one of the reasons why people get on this kick is because as Star Trek goes through all these iterations, that somebody's looking for, well, what is the core of Star Trek for them to latch on to? And if it doesn't have that, then it's not Star Trek to them. To some people, it's the ships. To some people, it's the way the characters interact. For some people, it's the themes that are in the story, whether it's, you know, about togetherness, whether it's about, you know, allegory, whatever those things are. And so they, as you get a more diverse pantheon of these stories, they're looking for that common denominator, and it's become very simplified to them. It's this. If it doesn't have this, it's not Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you can pin down this. I think even the fact that we had a series that really didn't center around a spaceship, it centered around a space station, you know, so it wasn't even a starship had to be the thing that it was centered around. I guess right. Space. It needs to be in space, perhaps.
It seems like whenever you take a slightly new angle, you're going to ruffle some feathers with somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, you get that with a lot of different properties, too. Like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the movie was a big...
Look at the latest Star Wars movie. Book. Whoa, yeah, you can do astral projections. Well, there's a lot of things about Jedi we haven't figured out yet.
Yeah.
Right. And I think you have to keep expanding what you're doing. And so I think that it really isn't a good idea to say that this one thing is what Star Trek is, because that's very limiting. you're really pigeonholing it into something that it didn't start out that way. It just didn't. If you look at the stories were all over the place. In those first three seasons of Star Trek, it was everything, you know, from high comedy to serious and everything in between. Allegories, just fun stuff. Alien of the Week.
You know, just Green Gods.
Magatu. Chicago. Just throw it out mobsters. There.
Yeah, the mobster. Nazis.
Right. Twice. More than twice? We have more than because we had them in Enterprise as well, right? So at least twice.
Oh, yeah.
Were they on Enterprise?
Wasn't that when they came back, like the beginning of the cliffhanger at the end of the third season?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Joe quit watching at that point.
No. The only Star Trek I ever quit watching was Voyager.
Really?
Yep.
Not enough allegories, right?
Not enough. No. I was like, this isn't Star Trek. This is Lost in Space.
Yeah, sort of. The allegory meter was low.
So I think we're in agreement that I just don't think it's fair to say that this is what Star Trek is. And I think it'd be really hard pressed to point to any one thing that Star Trek always is. It's not always those same characters. It's not always about the crew together. It's not always about the Enterprise. It's not always, there's nothing that Star Trek is always about.
It's not even always hopeful. Yeah. Because you've got episodes like In the Pale Moonlight, which is one of the best episodes of Deep Space Nine, and that's a pretty dark episode and kind of bleak.
Absolutely. There are definitely episodes where you go, I think you feel sometimes that in your bones that that's not Star Trek because it's not what you're familiar with Star Trek. And I think that's a difference. It's like, okay, it's outside the norm, maybe, of what Star Trek is, but that doesn't make it not Star Trek. That just makes it trying something new, trying something different, because you want to keep expanding. You know, I think one of the challenges that Discovery has had is everything is so locked down. What do you do? And I think that in this case, part of what they said was, well, it's partially the thing you're familiar with and new things. We're changing some things because we can't get painted into this corner so deep that there's nothing to tell.
Right.
And I think that would happen even if it was post Voyager, same thing would be going on. So you have to keep expanding and you have to keep redefining what Star Trek is at any moment in time, not what it is in total. Because if you can, I think that's just too simple. It's just too simple an answer.
I agree.
Amen.
Hear, hear.
All right.
So say we all. Oh, that's another.
That's a different franchise. You've upset the Tribble again. That Tribble that somehow got off of Lorca's desk and didn't get zapped with the fortune cookies.
And speaking of Tribbles,
around here now,
we have a tie-in with Tribbles coming up.
Oh,
yeah, yes, we do. Yes, we do, because it's time now to return from our main mission. Wow, a lot less coming back from main mission. I thought there'd be more
budget cuts.
Be more to that than I. So now it's time, since we're all safely back from our main mission, for our Warp Speed Roundtable. Wow, the table gets noisier all the time.
Somebody put a piece of paper under that leg.
And this is a game that we're going to call Which Would You Rather? So in this game, we're going to ask which one of these three Star Trek, the animated series characters, would you most like to see brought to life? So I would say into the norm of Star Trek. So this would be something you would see all the time in Star Trek. And why you would want to see this. So your three choices are, first, Lieutenant Arix, the Edosian navigator. You remember him?
Three arms, yep.
That's right.
He looks like Saru, by the way.
No. Okay. Okay, well, if you think so.
Well, somewhat, perhaps. Yeah, somewhat, perhaps.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Mares, the Katian communications officer. She was the
cat lady.
Feline.
Yep.
Yes, yes. Or the Glommer, the genetically engineered Tribble Eater.
Who looked more like a Kohlrabi.
Well, it's like a shaved Tribble.
Right. <He's laughs> an upside down Kohlrabi.
So I will kick things off that I would say I think it'd be really cool to see Lieutenant Arix on the show. I think, you know, as a character walking around doing things, we haven't seen that level of a character. I'm not sure if I could take his voice for that long a period of time.
Because, yeah, the voice would have to change.
Right. So I think we'd have to bit of that, but I think he's just a cool looking character. I think
be a magnificent feat of CGI to get that middle arm.
Or practical effect, which would be much more interesting than that, to actually have the person there, you know, on set doing that.
No, that's what I mean. You'd have a real actor, but you'd CGI that third limb in.
So let me ask you, Joe, who would you like to see?
Absolutely Arix. I always thought he was cool. Back when I was a kid, first saw the animated series, I'm like, I want to see that guy. So yeah, definitely Arix, but I got to give a runner up to the Glommer. I would like to see that.
Just to watch him running.
Yeah.
All right. How about you, Craig?
I'm going to go with Lieutenant Imris.
We saw her at Dragon Con.
Yes, we did actually.
She brought her own kitty litter scoop. Starfleet insignia and all.
That was funny. Yeah, it had the Starfleet insignia on it. I want to see her purr. And I'll just leave it right there.
Craig, you're on dangerous ground now.
I think we are going to leave that right there. We just quickly move on.
Back away slowly.
Back away from the nine lives and go to Chuck.
You know, I was going to go with the Glommer originally, but I think that'd just be too creepy to see, you know, predatory action on Star Trek, especially on board, you know, something as cute and cuddly as a Tribble. You know, they're sitting there cooing away. I was like, shut up now. Emres was right up there. She was, you know, very attractive young lady, very intelligent. I think that would be
not the Dragon Con lady.
From a real life actor standpoint, I think that would come across kind of comedic. I don't know that you could pull off a human feline, you know, bipedal thing. Wait, without
do you not remember the Kilrathi?
Without they've somebody, already somebody thinking about Cats the Musical or something.
Yeah. Well, may I remind you that, and I always wondered if this character was supposed to be the same species as Mares, but in Star Trek V, we had the three-breasted Catwoman dancer on Nimbus. Right.
Oh, yes.
That's after she retired from Starfleet. She
and we all know how well Star Trek V went over.
She was tripping to work her way through Starfleet Academy. Earning some money.
I needed some money. Yeah. We were all hard up for cash at that point.
Remember the Kilrathi? You know what I'm talking about? I know Joe knows.
Yes.
Wing Commander. They were tiger looking or lion looking.
Well, you also have the Kzinti, right?
I'm not buying it. I don't know on the bridge every week if that would work for me anyway. I always found Arix a little creepy in some respect. I don't know if it was just his bony facial structure or that third arm was just a little too much for me.
It's his flute.
It's a flute.
He played a flute.
Again, Craig, dangerous territory. Just back away slowly.
That wasn't his third appendage. That's some...
No. So, did you give an answer, Chuck, or have you just gone through every single character?
I'm gonna call an audible. I still like
his favorite is Vic Fontaine from the animated series.
The characters from the Jihad. That whole clan of Scar and the little bug dude. It's cold in here. the one guy who says, I like this place. It's got variety. Yeah, there's just I think that line still endears me to that one character. I don't even remember his name at this point, but he gets my vote.
Okay, so sir, not appearing on this list gets you.
You can make me look this up, aren't you?
All right. Well, we have no clear. Well, we got what, two votes for Eric's. So I guess Eric's would be most likely to show up on the show. So if we've got the people in charge of Star Trek,
if you count my vote and Chuck's one of his five, then
well, I mean, three. He voted for everything, including something not on the list. So,
hey, I used my imagination, and isn't that what's important in an animated series?
Imagination. Okay.
I did see a lot of fans suggest that Eric's should be included in the next Kelvin movie as a replacement for Chekhov, since Anton Yelchin passed and they said they will not recast the role.
Right. Mm-hmm.
However, as the father of two young girls who's always looking for more female representation for role models for them, I would actually rather see them bring in Janice Rand and actually make her kind of cool this time.
Interesting. She wasn't in any of the Kelvin movies, was she?
Not yet.
No, but she was mentioned.
Chapel was mentioned.
Oh, Chapel. I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. My bad.
All right. Well, Chuck is... clearly looking up that character's name.
You're right. He's not listed on this episode.
See? There you go.
We've got James Doohan played Char, the flying bird creature who was he betrayed them. He stole that Christmas ribbon to himself. David Gerald, whom we talked about earlier,
yes,
was the voice of M, who, you know, the wimpy bug guy. And then Lara, who was hitting on Kirk more than he was hitting on anybody else in the whole series combined, was played by Jane Webb. There's no mention of the other two characters. Also produced by DC Fontana.
So if you know the name of that character, you can write to us and let us know.
Gonna have to go find it. How can they do that, Clinton?
They can do that by posting to our Facebook page at facebook.com/thetopicistrek, or you can follow us on Twitter to do that. That's another way to do it. You can go over to our website if you want to do something there. So there's a variety of ways to do this.
You've got it better timed while I play the music. Why don't we just do that?
Yeah, I was going to say, but before we do that,
Oh, wait, stop. Hey, you weren't ready. Okay.
Stop. I wasn't ready for you. You're jumping ahead of me. We've got to find out what people are up to. And I know that Joe, in addition to the podcast we're all familiar with, has something new to plug as well.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Megapodtastic, I don't know what's going on with that. You're interested in being a co-host on Megapodtastic, send me an email, because we're kind of up in the air right now because... I don't have a co-host anymore.
Oh my.
So that's what's going on there. But
you need to pay him more. Jeez.
Well, here's the thing. I had one co-host retire. He stepped away to do something else. He had another thing come along, and that was Bob Trait. So then I went to my original co-host from when I started the show years and years ago and said, "Hey, would you come back?" And he did, except Skype did not work on his computer because his computer is so old. He said, I can't get Skype to work. We have to do this on Google Hangouts. So we did. And I found that working on Google Hangouts is a real big pain in the buttocks, number one. And number two, then more of his equipment started breaking. And we did the last show with him over a cell phone. It turned out horrible. So that wasn't working. And now we're in a kind of state of limbo. So if you'd like to co-host Megapodtastic, let me know.
Right.
But yeah, Megapodtastic will be back eventually. I just don't know when eventually is.
But in better news, you have something else.
Yes. Yes. This show is done in-house. And by in-house, I mean totally in my house. Because my wife and I are doing a show called Honey, You've Got to See This. And it's based on the fact that we both really like movies. And we both have movies that we grew up watching from when we were young, and we've learned that we have not seen a lot of each other's favorite movies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we decided to alternate. We're thinking it's probably going to be a monthly show. Once a month, we're going to alternate, and I pick a movie for her. She picks a movie for me. It was her idea, so she got to pick the first movie. Episode one's out now, and she made me watch My Fair Lady. And
why is the scene in black and white? Why is it? Where's the color?
Joe, prepare yourself for the amazement that is Beaches.
Oh, well, I've actually seen that one already.
Steel Magnolias.
I know she's making me watch. She's making me watch Avatar. I avoided Avatar like the plague, but she's making me watch that. And the second episode, which isn't out yet, I already made her watch Rocky II. So
nice. Hey, and I got to say, you know, Chuck, I've named pretty much all of your podcasts. And so Joe put out a thing out there asking for suggestions for this new podcast.
Yeah.
And mine was, I'll show you mine if you show me yours.
Hey, now.
And go, you need to go with that.
Well,
that's actually a pretty creative title, Craig. You might get some extra hits just off the title alone.
Yeah, whoa.
Well, our original title was going to be My Spouse Made Me Watch It. That was the working title. But when we Googled My Spouse Made Me Watch It,
a lot
of porn.
Yeah. So, don't want that.
Let me say, I don't believe you.
Okay, well, the police come for Craig.
Joe, where can we find?
Well, it's up in Stitcher. I think it's up in iTunes because I just submitted it today and I got about 5 or 6 error messages. And then finally it said it was accepted, but I haven't actually found it in there yet. So by the time this comes out, it will hopefully be in iTunes. It's on Stitcher and it's at honeyyouvegottoseethis.com.
All right. We'll put a link to that in the show notes so people can find it there as well.
And also, there's megapodtastic.com. Someday, something will happen there.
That's right. You the listener, or maybe the co-host, for all we know.
The next internet star.
Remember that show? Remember that CBS reality show, Rockstar In Excess, where In Excess was looking for their
new
singer? I should do that. I should do like a podcast where I'm auditioning. It's like, you know, you could be the co-host. Just audition. On
Rockstar Megapodzilla.
Every week we someone.
Hey, why don't you call it I'll Show You Mine If You Show Me Yours?
Now you stop pitching that idea. Just stop.
You are in error.
Chuck, where can they find you if they need to get in touch with you to say what's up with anything?
They can find me over at chucktomasi.com. That's T-O-M-A-S-I, which is the nexus of books and podcasts, et cetera. Anything that I do is over there, as well as chuckchat.com, which has the podcast. Also at, I haven't been dinging my own bell, over at podcastingfordummies.com, which I do a companion podcast to the book with T. Morris. And, you know, I think that'll round it off for today. There's a number of other things on my personal website that you can find that are linked to various work-related projects. I do lots and lots of videos on YouTube and elsewhere for work.
Very good. Craig, if you've stopped Googling things, where might people find you?
You can find me over at, well, you can just search for Technorama Podcast and find the show Chuck and I do over at chuckchat.com. You know, that is not an easy name to say. Yeah.
It's an alliteration, also, man. Come on. We've been doing this for what, coming up on 13 years?
I'm just saying.
Also, apparently, if you Google, you show me yours, I'll show you mine, this name will come up for
He's registering the domain is what he's doing.
It's really long, hard to type in, but it's so worth it. Anyway, and you can find me, Clinton, at comedyforecast.com, all one word with the number 4. And we're rapidly approaching April, where I do a podcast every single day.
There we go.
And there'll be a multi-part story again this year.
Always appreciated.
So look forward to that. And it's going to be a fun one.
I'd like to point out real quick that if you Google, you show me yours and I'll show you mine, the top thing that comes up is a Kris Kristofferson song.
Nice. Well,
I'm going to register the thing that my wife said. This is one of those things we mixed up when we were first dating and still remember it. I'll show you yours if you show me mine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, since we're all busy at GoDaddy right now, it's time to disengage the impulse engines and engage the spore drive. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you, so follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, Joe, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on the red shirt.
And keep on wearing those pajamas.
The red pajamas.
Yeah.
I have to clear my browser history real fast.